Well, this is the magical hour. We'll take phone calls with Eric as we talk about magic, black magic, white magic, curses, spells, you name it. We got it when we come back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Eric Coetting. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's called BecomeALivingGod.com, which is the name of his book that we've been talking about. Tell me a little bit more about the living God part of us, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as we develop our magical abilities, what we start to understand is that we do have what can only really be called superpowers. That actually each and every one of us has the ability to tap into godlike powers. And as we push these further and further, we start finding out there is no limit to them, that we can literally do anything, we can know anything, we can be anywhere. We're only restricted really by our belief in those restrictions. And so as we lift those belief systems and kind of peek beyond them, we start to see we are limitless. We are living gods, each and every one of us already. And so the teachings that I give are really a pathway to remembering that, to understanding that and experiencing it.
Since you've been doing this, and you've been doing it many, many years in your life, anybody in your family do this too?
You know, no. Like I said, I've got the lineage, but it actually stops with my grandmother who's passed, and with my adopted family, I am the oddball out for sure.
What do they say about your practicing black magic?
They don't say much. It's not. They're very happy for my success, and there's. I've got a couple sisters that are really, really interested in it, and that I'll have some really good conversations with about it. But for the most part, it's not really the topic of Thanksgiving dinner so much. But at the same time, it's not shocking to anyone, because this has been my obsession throughout my entire life.
If people just met you, Eric, would they say, "Hey, he's a nice guy"?
Yes, yeah. You know, that's actually a kind of a challenge that I throw out there to anybody who would make the snap judgment that I am evil or gloomy or whatever. Just have a conversation with me. I am actually probably one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. That's not in spite of black magic. It's actually due to black magic. If it weren't for black magic, I would have definitely gone down a very, very dark alley. Just events in life and powerlessness in childhood, things that I wasn't able to control. I had no idea how to latch on to any sense of self-empowerment until I got my hands on black magic. And then you know, like I said, it did go from the petty desires that I was trying to achieve to actually unfolding my greatest self through this path.
What is your favorite part of black magic?
My favorite part of it is the immersion. It's the way that I've described it is dropping through rings of reality. So you'll sit there, and whether it's through a meditation or a full ritual, you'll feel the floor drops out from underneath you, and you're suspended in this limitless space. You'll lose equilibrium and you'll lose your sense of balance to the point that you feel like you're just spinning in space. And at that point, you can really get into immediate direct contact with whatever you're trying to get in contact with in such a way that it transcends conversation, it transcends questions and answers, and you simply are in a communion with the thing that you're calling.
Do people come to you for good things like, you know, a better job, a relationship, things like that?
Yeah. For the most part, I myself don't, I won't do curses for people. I won't do hexes, things like that. I even try to avoid doing controlling love spells, because once again, I've just learned the power of this is something that needs to be respected. But so most people who do come to me to hire me to do rituals or to teach them how to do the rituals themselves, almost always it is for a positive thing, that they want to increase their income or their abundance, or that they want to have a greater connection with their higher self, their higher power, and these rituals can definitely get them there to a degree and with an efficacy that you can't find through any other path.
Have you met some black magicians that simply wow you?
Yeah, I work with some black magicians that simply wow me. I've become a living god. I am constantly impressed by what different people are capable of. It's like this power comes through us, and each of us expresses it in a completely unique way. And so I'm actually impressed by every black magician who uses this, because we're all expressing the same power, but it becomes a completely different flower as it expresses through each of us.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Let's start by going to Jeff in Tennessee. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, George, I'm glad you took my call. I really love your show.
Thank you.
I just don't tell him that, I've had many close calls with death. I've shot myself in the head and come back to life. You know, for how long I lay there, but I was good as dead, I do believe. And I consider myself 80% psychic. I have visions and blessings and many healings. I had a premonition of, you know, whether it was Avery up in town. I was walking up and down the road, one of the first ones in town, and owned one of the stores here in town, in small town Adamsville. And I was staring at him and then wanting to do something to him. And I was in sleep one night, and I seen him, and I was staring at him. And a voice comes, and I stopped staring at that man. I kept staring at him out of sleep. They said, stop staring at that man. I don't know if he's saying, you know, that man's up to no good, leave him alone or something, or just didn't leave him alone. You know, just don't send him, you know.
He was going to do something, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the law, the police has wanted me to, has shot me before, and almost put me to death years ago. And I just don't, I ain't never practiced black magic, but, you know, I just ain't into that.
Sounds like you'd be a good candidate for it. Do you have to be psychically inclined to be a good magician?
No, not at all. You know, there is a matter of self-selection. The people who think this is silly, it's probably not for them. They're probably not going to have very much success with it. But if anybody that is feeling drawn to it, you're not just being drawn to it. You're being called to it. You're being pulled to it. Those are the people who are going to have the best success. Now, like Jeff here, we've got experiences will happen spontaneously where he's not calling upon things, but he's having these things happen. This is actually extremely common, and that's actually one of the really interesting things is when somebody's not looking for it and it pops up anyways, that really makes for an interesting case of for the fact that this is very real. There are very real forces that are reaching into this world and trying to get our attention.
Who would be more apt to be a magician that practices black magic, a man or a woman?
You know, I would have said a man a few years ago, because I saw mainly with my clientele, it was attracting a lot more men than women. And I think a good deal of that is the marketing that I use, the extreme aggressive, even the statement, become a living god, is an extremely masculine, aggressive statement. But I've actually seen a lot of women popping up. At this point, I would say it's about equal.
Really? Okay. I would have thought the male population would be more apt for it, but that's interesting.
Yeah, the male population, I think, is going to be more interested. What I've seen is they're more interested in the evocation side of it and the power side of it. Women seem to be more interested with the communication and the contact part of it. And so it does kind of have a dividing line there, which is really a yin-yang type of thing where the men are looking to take it and use the power, whereas women seem to be more interested in the presence.
Have you ever wished somebody to be dead?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you did? What happened?
Those people don't exist anymore.
They died?
How to put this carefully?
I don't know why I asked you that, but something compelled me to.
Yeah, I absolutely. I have performed rituals, and coincidentally, the people that these were performed for vanished.
How did vanished, or you know they died?
Oh, I know they died.
I mean, how did they die? Like car?
I'm trying to mince words here, George.
I understand. Car crashes, heart attacks. What happened?
Most car crashes have happened, but most of the time it's through very fast-moving diseases, cancers that develop and are stage four almost instantly.
Now, are these people that you were asked to have them leave this planet, or these are people you knew and you did it?
These are people that I knew that presented an immediate threat.
A physical threat to you?
Most of the time a physical threat to me or to loved ones.
My God. How did you feel after that?
You know, it is actually a remarkable feeling of internal silence and humility. I've never walked away from any of.
I mean, did you feel sorry about it?
No.
Really?
No, I felt humbled that degree of power could flow through me.
How soon did they die after the curse was spelled on them?
One of them was within minutes. Others have been 10 years.
Holy Toledo. Minutes?
Yeah.
Would you do it again?
If I had to, absolutely.
Yes.
With the same caution that I would use with pulling out a firearm and using that.
Now, these people that were despicable that died, I would assume they were not good people.
They were not good people. They were people that not only intended harm, but were doing harm and needed to be stopped.
Would you say that this was self-defense?
Yes.
It would almost be tantamount to them breaking into your house with a gun.
It would be tantamount to that in the intensity of the need for that kind of reaction, yeah. As far as the imminency of the threat, if somebody's coming and, you know, literally breaking into my house with a gun, I'm not going to light candles. I'm going to grab my 9mm.
You got to defend yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. I'm not even going to ask you how you attempted the spell, because I don't want anybody else to learn this.
No, but if they want to learn it, becomealivinggod.com.
I mean, you'll teach them that way.
Every secret that I know, I put out there. And I really do come at my teaching without a concern for how the individual applies it. How they use the power is really not my concern. But I trust the power enough to guide them through their own alchemy.
I mean, you would never wish somebody to die just because you got ticked off at them, would you?
No, more than I would, you know, once again, picking up a gun and shooting someone because they pissed me off.
No. Well, watch the words. Watch the language. Okay.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Let's go to JW in Alaska. Welcome to the program. Hey, JW.
Hey, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Go ahead.
George, do you remember something between 3 and 5 years ago? You had a guest on your show named Kumaran Taj. Do you remember him?
I do vaguely. Gosh, I've interviewed so many, okay. But I remember the name.
You asked him a question. He is a practitioner of magic, and
he
practices white magic. And you asked him if he ever dealt in the dark side, and he said, no, I leave the dark stuff to EA. And, Eric, my question to you is...
You are right, JW.
Yeah.
You're the guy?
I am.
Wow. What a memory, JW. Go ahead.
Well, yes, I am familiar with your YouTube channel. And I'm asking you very sincerely, from not trying to be combative or anything, but don't you think it's a bit irresponsible that a 15-year-old kid that dabbles around with the Ouija board can find your site on YouTube and conjure up a Zazel into his bedroom to live with him for the rest of his life and ruin his life?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's a very fair question. And first and foremost, my YouTube channel as well as my website is restricted to people who are 18 years and older. So,
but they lie, don't they, to get to it?
People do lie. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not able to police whether people are lying or not, but I do have a standard, 18 or over. If you can join the military and you can go learn how to kill there, you can look at my site. That's a line in the sand that I've drawn. And if people find ways to cross over that illegally, that's a bit out of my control. So is it irresponsible? No, so...
But you were the guy the guest was talking about 5 years ago.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was. I've been making
You're the EA, huh?
Yes, I am. I've been making waves through my whole life, and I'll never stop. To address the responsibility of it, it would be irresponsible to not put this information out, because the information is already out there. People have it. The elites have been using the same information to control the masses. The same information has been used throughout history for various things. What I'm doing is I'm allowing all adults to have the same information. I'm leveling the playing field. So I'm actually doing the ultra-responsible thing by releasing this information. And then getting people in contact with beings like Azazel is only going to be good for them,
yeah,
eventually. But Azazel is the Promethean figure that has brought fire, the fire of the gods, and given it to men. And so I am just his helper, helping him bring that fire.
I don't like Ouija boards. Do you still dabble with them?
I don't find them useful. For myself, for my practices, I can call the spirit and just ask it a question. I don't need the board. The board gets in the way. What you find with Ouija boards is that they attract the kind of lower level wandering spirits for the most part. So it's really hard to get a clear definition of what's going on. They can be the one useful aspect you can get with working with Ouija boards is getting answers to immediate questions, things that are about to happen in the immediate future. They seem to be able to predict things that are really close to happening. But beyond that, they seem really restricted in their capability.
I bet. And, the caller has a point. You know, when young people are on there, maybe you should have a disclaimer. Maybe you do.
We do.
Yeah, all right, that's good.
Yeah, we have multiple disclaimers. We have multiple areas that must be checked. I intend to continue doing what I do for the rest of my life, and so I've taken all precautions to make sure that I'm able to do that without intervention.
When you meet your maker one day, Eric, will it be the devil or God?
It will be myself.
Interesting. And your website, give it out again to folks?
Yeah, becomealivinggod.com.
Super. And how do they find you on YouTube?
You can go to YouTube, EAC Wedding on YouTube, or Become a Living God at YouTube, and that should direct you right to my channel.
Spell your last name for everybody?
Yeah, K-O-E-T-T-I-N-G.
Very good. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. EA has been practicing this for a long time, dabbling in the mysteries of black magic. We'll talk a little bit about the occult and get the rest of your calls when we come back. We'll be back with final questions with Eric Coetting, the black magician, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Barbara Hand Cloud joins us to talk about alchemy and other dimensions, and then we'll have Jim Parrish talking about miracles, and boy, we need some miracles right about now, don't we? And welcome back, our final segment with Eric Coetting as we talk about black magic and your calls as well. Eric, I want to ask you again about these deaths that you did. How many people did you wish that they wouldn't be around anymore?
Oh, a small handful. I've got a book, Baneful Magic, that people can check out at bog.co/completeworks. You can put things about all of my books right there. But I've got a book, Baneful Magic, that details how to perform these curses, how to do things from simple, harming people or just moving people out of your life, all the way to full-scale magical warfare. And in that, I detail some of those cases where I had the need to use baneful magic against others. And as far as how many people have mysteriously died coincidentally after such a curse. A very, very small handful.
Do these people die in their sleep, or what happens to them?
One lady did die in her sleep. Yeah, she was actively working on harming my family at the time, and she died in her sleep of some sort of heart condition after being cleared by her doctor just a few days earlier, told that she was perfectly healthy, had a heart attack in her sleep. Some people, like I said, one person took about 10 years of a very, very miserable battle with cancer after the curse was performed.
I guess they can't get you for murder, can they?
No, not in the United States, not yet.
Are there some countries that they could go after you?
You know, yeah, they've got witch hunters in Africa and in different second, third world countries. That is still enforced for sure. In the United States and most developed countries, you can pray, and they actually will have group prayers where people will gather together to pray against the current president or pray against certain political figures and you know, pray for their death. And it's completely protected under, you know, Religious Freedom Acts and such. But yeah, it's also extremely unprosecutable.
Could you use black magic to kind of get rid of the coronavirus? Could you do something like that? Could you use it for good?
So I'll tell you what. You know, some of the people that I work with, J.D. Temple, Orly Stewart, J.S. Garrett, and Barbie, his wife, there's a group of black magicians that I work with actually did exactly that. What they did was a virus hacking ritual. And so they basically hacked the coronavirus so that everybody who was involved in that ritual, anybody who signed up for it, would actually experience positive effects from contracting the virus, from the social effects of the virus, that it would actually reverse the effects of that and really add power and add strength and health to those people.
It is remarkable. We've done prayer experiments and intention experiments on trying to rid it, and I think some of it's working. I think it's slowing down.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we have to realize is that we're in the middle of a process of evolution, and this virus is here for a purpose, and it's serving its purpose. I don't know that its purpose was simply to kill people. I think that it's serving some sort of alteration. The actual mechanism of any virus is really interesting because it's not even a thing that enters you. It's more of a something that is rewriting your genetic code, and we're seeing the obvious effects of that genetic code rewriting in the sicknesses and deaths. But what we're not seeing is even more interesting. I think that something within us is being changed at a core level.
All right, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Don in Alberta, Canada, to get us started. Hi, Donald. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I love your show. I really liked last night's show. I've been listening since the beginning of time.
Thank you, sir.
Basically, most of my life I've been working for God and / Michael. I had some questions for your guest, but I'll just make a little statement first. Like, this is more, I guess, for your listeners. Man can make laws. But if they violate spiritual law, it only takes one person to complain. And when you take your complaint, you take it to God, which is a frequency. But when you go against, like, let's say somebody's in your space and they're interfering, you cannot take energy at them directly. You have to take it to God and ask that the person be removed from your space and stop interfering in your space. Otherwise, you create a debt, a karmic debt, or a link with that soul or that individual because you've changed their experiences in life. That's my understanding of it. Now, I could be wrong, but so if you don't want to incur a debt to be paid at a future date and time, you have to go through God, or you can't even pray for somebody without their permission. It's a violation of spiritual law, is my understanding. So you have to go to God and say, excuse me, but can you remove this person from my space? And then that will happen. And it can be a system, too. It works for systems and people.
What's your thoughts of that, Eric?
On one hand, that seems like it's a good deal of the externalization of the God force, that as you're asking God and bringing this to God, you're really bringing this to your highest self, and you're saying, is this in congruency with my highest self? And you know, often, like I'll do the same thing as far as performing divination or feeling if this is the right action for me. And if I get a no, I listen to that, absolutely. And so we can externalize that that God force as an external God that we're bringing it to. But even if we understand God as being all, then God is within us. And so we're really just contacting our highest self to get that permission, more or less. And if we do filter through that, I actually think that's a spectacular way of looking at that. If we filter our actions, whether magical or mundane, through that filter of what would my highest self want me to do, and is this okay by my own standards, that's an excellent way of actually approaching this. So although we may disagree on the vocabulary that we'll use, I think the spirit of the thing is pretty much agreed on.
I don't want to dwell on the dead people that you've thought about, but when the first one occurred, what did you think about the power of the magic?
The first thought was, oh my gosh, this is a lot. This is more.
Did it scare you?
Yeah.
It was so powerful?
It humbled me. It humbled me. It did make me pause It definitely made me pause. It definitely made me pause and reconsider every ritual that I would do from that point forward, knowing that this has that potential, that it's not just a system of self-motivation, but this actually can create some pretty intense effects.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Eric. I want to bring in a more secular question. You were talking about yin-yang. This might not really relate to magic per se, but okay, say someone was an elite sprinter in college. They try out for the Olympic team. They're maybe one of the last cuts. Then they go into a lucrative office job where they're basically just sitting all year, though they're making a lot of money. That disturbs that previous yin-yang they had with running. Now, what would you say about using that example of disturbing your personal yin-yang and how that might affect things?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for the question. That's awesome. Yeah. On one hand, you know, it sounds like that's going from one extreme to the other, and that's that is disturbing. That can create an imbalance, but I think that those sorts of imbalances are unnecessary. In some groups, like the Order of Nine Angles, for instance, they'll do that on purpose. Well, they'll undergo insight roles that will take the initiate into situations that they might never ever engage in outside of having that initiatic experience. So, for instance, if somebody is naturally a pacifist, they might be encouraged to join the military. If somebody is naturally militant, they might be encouraged to take a year and be completely pacifist, just to intentionally disturb your own perception of yourself and your world. So it is a I think those kinds of disturbances are good, and I think actually any kind of disturbance is good, because when something gets perturbed, we can really see what lies under it, and we can see that we are not necessarily the sum of our experiences or anything like that. There is that we're able to adapt to all these different experiences that we'll have. We're able to see ourselves as through different facets of our being through these different perturbed experiences.
Eric, would you say there are more people practicing white magic as opposed to black magic like you do?
More and more people are moving to the left-hand path, and at this point, black magic is taking over, absolutely.
It is. How come?
Well, for one, the promises of white magic and religion and the entire right hand path have just fallen short. In every way, every promise that God has made has not been delivered on. The reverse of that is that the power of black magic is unlimited and is it proves itself out. And as we go forward in time, it's we are losing the religiosity that has pervaded the world for so long. People are getting disillusioned by just once again not having the promises delivered, and as they investigate deeper, like I said before, this is a process of alchemy that occurs. Eventually, everybody ends up on the left-hand path sooner or later. And Crowley, for instance, is a great example of that.
That's right.
He's a white magician and naturally just gravitates to where he belongs.
Saskatoon, Canada, we go. Lloyd, take it away.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions, George, for your guest.
Okay.
One, we were looking on the internet. We come across a name called Aberrat. I don't know if my guest knows what that is. And number two, how do you embrace the darkness that you were talking about?
Let's start with that one first, Eric.
Yeah, how do you embrace the darkness? So, you know, there's an excellent initial exercise I'll give people, which is to sit in a dark room at night. The best hour for it is 3 a.m. That's the witching hour. And most people are asleep, and the energy of the earth is at a really calm state at 3 a.m., just whatever your local time is. And light a black candle in a dark room, and start calling out to the names of every demon or devil that you can think of.
Oh, God, Eric, why?
because we need to face the darkness. We can't run and hide from it. Hiding does us no good. The forces are still there. They're still looking at us. And so if we face them head on, then we can learn from them, we can make friends with them and allies with them, and they can then work for us. And so you start calling out their names, and you'll feel the presence is thickening in the room. Once it's completely thick, once there is no doubt that you are surrounded by armies of darkness, blow the candle out and sit in the darkness and look out into it. And you're going to start to see the shadows moving. You're going to start to hear things. You're going to see things. You will have an immersion into that darkness if you sit with it for long enough and sit calmly, being calm and keeping yourself at a nice, relaxed state throughout any ritual is the key to it. And if you can just calmly sit with all of that darkness around you, breathe, and you can feel it pulling itself close to you, and as you exhale, you can feel it moving away, and the darkness itself starts to respond and react and communicate with you.
Let's go back to Lloyd for his first question. You were breaking up a little bit, Lloyd. Go ahead with the first one again.
We come across a name from the internet. It was Aberraxis.
Aberraxis.
You know what that is?
Oh, do you know what that might be?
Aberraxis. You know, so Aberraxis is a specific demon, and I think the word itself is associated with darkness. It's not. It's kind of a. First off, this is not a demon or a spirit or a force that I've personally worked with in any direct way, although as I say that, I can feel that it's been with me nonetheless. So thank you for the communication. I will begin to work with Aberraxis.
Eric, if a parent had a little child who wanted to dabble with black magic, would you encourage it?
With the parents' full permission, written, signed permission, we would maybe consider that. That would have to be a special case where there was no clear disagreement from either parent. Then we could consider that. But for the most part, I would probably rather work with the parent, and then the parent could teach their own children. I think that the parents, I myself am the parent of a child, and I've taught her everything I know. Every chance I get, every question she asks, I give her as thorough of an answer as I can give her.
And all right. Well, you good luck, and don't cast too many spells on too many people, huh, kid?
Yeah, right.
Thank you. It's Eric, the Black Magician. Wow. I'd rather dabble in the white magic, but wow. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.